Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Thanks for checking out this podcast from Connecting Faith. You can hear the show live each weekday at noon Central Time, and there are many more podcasts for this and all our Faith Radio shows available online. Our web address is myfaithradio.com. And thanks for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
We are Connecting Faith once again. I'm Neil Stavem. I always appreciate your company. And I always enjoy our times together here. You can stick around for the hour or just a few minutes. Glad to have you listening in. And Brian, we've got a great opportunity to connect with a good friend again today. And this is one of those guests where you could just, you know, you could chat for hours.
But, it's entertainment, but, information, and faith all melded together in a It's jubilation.
It's yes. Okay. So there's no pressure for Drew now to deliver on all that. But I always enjoy talking with Drew Trotter, who is executive director of the Consortium of Christian Studies Centers, and he was for 20-plus years director and president of the Center for Christian Study in Charlottesville, Virginia, and has written on film and popular culture for 30-plus years in publications like Books and Culture, Christianity Today, and Critique, and also in the field of biblical studies, interpreting the Epistle to the Hebrews. He's done a seminar over the years called Show and Tell, How to View a Movie Responsibly. And we've had Drew on many times as we've just talked what's going on in Hollywood and about the films. And, of course, we're a couple weeks away from the Academy Awards and thought, well, this would be a good time to kind of connect once again with our good friend Drew. Welcome back to Connecting Faith, Drew.
Thank you, Neil. I always enjoy it.
We, and of course, we don't have hours to go because you actually have, you know, work to do, but we are going to take your time for an hour anyway. And I'm interested maybe to start, and maybe you can even tell a little bit about your background. If you got sort of interested in critiquing and reviewing movies back when you were, you know, leading a study center, and maybe just say a word about what that is. And, you know, I'm wondering if films still have a significant influence in our society, and that's why we should pay a little attention to them.
It is a very huge question in the whole industry right now. They're doing all kinds of different things to try to counterbalance what they fear is a great loss, which is the idea of going to the movies in the theater. Movies are just as strong as they've ever been on television, HBO, Netflix, and how you can download movies to your computer and your TV through that mechanism is going great guns. But movies in the theaters, though ticket sales, though the box office numbers are actually slightly up the last couple of years, the ticket sales have gone down. So people are willing to pay a little bit more. Ticket prices have gone up, but you haven't had as many tickets being sold because not as many people are going. And it seems like the only thing they'll go to the theater in great numbers for nowadays are action-adventure movies and animated films. The top 10 box office films of last year were either an animated movie like Frozen or Despicable Me number 2 or something like that, or the action-adventure films like Hunger Games and the various Marvel comics. Output, stuff like that. Iron Man 3 was last year. Huge numbers. Interesting also, Neil, especially as we compare them to the Academy Award movies, is that the movies in the top 10 box office movies were every one either PG-13, PG, or G. But 6 out of the 9 Academy Award nominees were R-rated movies. And those don't get seen by anything like as many people nowadays as perhaps they used to, but certainly as the PG-13 and PGs and G movies do.
Well, maybe I should just jump in at that point because I think we've had this conversation before. I mean, this is the, you know, the Academy Awards is an opportunity to maybe reinforce the views and the artistry of you know, producers and writers and actors who want to make statements that maybe more than sell tickets? Or?
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. Anybody who thinks that all of Hollywood is only about the bottom line doesn't understand film and what's out there. At the same time, the bottom line is absolutely crucial and very, very important. And what everybody is seeking, of course, is the holy grail of being able to tell your own story in your own way and yet sell lots and lots and lots of tickets. And that combination is rare. You do get in the Academy Awards what Hollywood, or at least the Motion Picture Academy of Arts and Sciences, is Motion Picture Academy, is trying to sort of sell as its best product that year. You know, the movies that they think were the greatest, whether they were big box office favorites or not. Some of them are this year. Gravity is number 7 on last year's box office. But you've also got Philomena in there that's number 90, or Nebraska that's like 117 or something. I did the research on this because I do this lecture every year called the Academy Award Nominees for Best Picture and what they tell us about ourselves. And I like to look at what those films really say about values that are current in America and or values that Hollywood would like to see current in America. So it's kind of interesting.
Well, I will let you answer that question. What do this year's nominees tell us about ourselves, or what would Hollywood like us to think about ourselves?
Well, we still love heroes. Gravity is a very heroic film. I don't know, of course, how many people have seen it, and I guess I would have to spoil these movies to be able to talk about them with much detail. But in that movie, a woman played by Sandra Bullock is an astronaut, but really only because she's a scientist. She had to do some astronaut kinds of things, and then all of a sudden, she gets in the middle of a chaotic situation where debris in space has made her have to try to get home in a little pod, and it's whether she does or not, I guess, is the question, but very few people expect her to die, and she doesn't. I'll spoil it that much. But it's a very strong statement about sort of humankind being able to make it on its own and you know, surviving the most chaotic and most difficult problem. We can solve it. We can do it. And it's not quite as simplistic as that. I really should say there's some pointers in the movie to like a Greek Orthodox icon at one point, and she prays. She says, sort of like Jimmy Stewart in the famous Christmas movie that escapes me.
Miracle on 34th?
No, not Miracle on 34th Street.
It's a Wonderful Life.
It's a Wonderful Life, yes.
It's a Wonderful Life, of course, where he says, I'm not really a praying man, but he prays, and things begin to change after that. Well, she does, and they do. But at the same time, the way she is shot in her sort of coming up out of the water and you know, surviving and getting her feet again, it's very much a sort of humanistic picture. But that kind of movie is great to watch. There's not a bad word in the movie. There's not a sex scene or violence. It's scary, but in the right kind of context. And you go all the way from that to The Wolf of Wall Street, which is Martin Scorsese's movie that people online have had fun trying to figure out how many times the F-bomb is actually dropped and whether it is the most times in cinema history. And I have been surprised even at that movie's, the lack of buzz about that movie's extraordinary sexuality. And I've never seen a movie that got rated R that was that explicit that many times in as many ways as it was. It really is a very, very foul kind of depiction of a certain lifestyle, plus all the language and all the other stuff. So you are running the gamut of those kinds of values and ideas in this year's movies.
Well, I guess I was just wanting to talk about what they tell us about ourselves, and we still love heroes, but there's a sense that we can make it on our own. But maybe on the other side, is there a sense of, well, you know, sort of live however we want, and, you know, that there aren't really any restraints anymore. I mean, I think we've talked about that in the past, that, you know, sex and violence and language seems to be, you know, just pushing the envelope all the time. That is that not even a consideration, do you think, from producers?
Sure. Now, that the latter, and I kind of got off the track myself, the latter is not really a theme. It's a mechanism.
Okay.
Are you going to portray on screen language and sex and violence to support some kind of viewpoint? And Wolf of Wall Street is a great example. It's doing extremely well at the box office. It's made more money both in this country and abroad than any Martin Scorsese movie ever has. I read one place. I wasn't able to really check that out myself, but apparently it's true. And what does it do? Well, it extols the life of an absolute cheat on Wall Street who loses his job in the great Wall Street crash of 1987 and starts selling penny stocks, which the mechanism, again, that he uses is just lying to people. It's just flat out lying to people. And all these middle America people put their $5,000 of savings in with this guy and lose every penny of it. And the whole scheme is predicated on them losing every penny of it. So this guy's lifestyle just gets more and more and more voluptuous, and he spends all of his money on drugs and on prostitutes and goes through two marriages and lies to people and obviously breaking the law on a regular basis. And Scorsese and Leonardo DiCaprio, who plays the main character and is one of the executive producers of the film as well, have been strongly taken to task by even secular critics for making this lifestyle look way too attractive. And they react saying, no, 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 that's not what we were trying to do. But the problem is, I've seen the film, and it does do that. If I were a male between the ages of 17, 20, and 24, which is still Hollywood's main audience, I would say, wow, this is amazing. This guy gets to do all these things, make all this money, have all this sex and drugs, and he goes to jail for 2 years, and at the end of the movie, he's released anyway. And he's down in Australia somewhere, starting it all over again with a self-help guru kind of thing. You know, they just don't accomplish their purpose. If that was what their purpose was, and they claim it was, they don't accomplish it in this movie at all. It extols this kind of lifestyle and really, puts it on a pedestal. Now, those are the two extremes. In between, you've got some wonderful films, like Philomena, where even though the church comes in for a hard hit because a group of nuns keep secret this woman's information about the child that she has given up to them for adoption, and the whole story centers around her trying to find her son. There's a very moving scene at the end where she forgives someone who's been particularly bad in this regard, and she does so because she's a Christian. And that's a wonderful, exciting kind of thing for a movie like that to be nominated for the Academy Award. You have American Hustle, where con men, again, a very well-known conning scandal of the 1990s called the Abscam scandal, ends up with a lot of remorse and a lot of asking of forgiveness and trying to make things right, while at the same time being a little bit ambivalent on those subjects who were involved in them, because they're the favorite characters in the movie. So you have a lot of different kinds of films like that with different values being portrayed.
We're going to talk more in a moment with Drew Trotter. I always enjoy our conversations. We talk a little bit about what's going on with films today in Hollywood, and particularly kind of with an eye toward the Oscars and nominations. But we'll talk a bit more about some of those themes that come in. And I want to talk, too, about the Christian films, their influence or their place, and a few of the other maybe concerns that coming up in the entertainment pages these days, and keeping it a Christian perspective as well. Our phone number, by the way, if you'd like to join in or have a comment or questions, 877-93-FAITH. It's 877-933-2484. Drew Trotter is Executive Director of the Consortium of Christian Studies Centers, and he's written on film and popular culture for a number of years, and as a film critic joining us today on Connecting Faith.
helping you grow deeper in your faith.
Why do we suffer? Why does God allow us to suffer? Hey friends, I'm Susie Larson, and on the next Live the Promise, I'm honored to talk with author Philip Yancey. He shares what he's learned from the valleys of his life. Then we'll hear from a woman whose courageous faith in God prevented a massive school tragedy and the suffering of hundreds.
Live the Promise with Susie Larson, weekdays from 3 to 4 on Faith Radio. Here's Dr. Charles Stanley.
The last promise, the last prophecy, the last word Jesus spoke, and the last prayer given in the Word of God is a word concerning His return. The first prophecy in the Bible deals with His return. The last prophecy in the Bible deals with His return. That is the Word of Jesus Christ, the Word of prophecy, a Word of promise.
The promise of Christ's coming again. This week on In Touch with Dr. Charles Stanley.
Hear In Touch weekdays at 2 p.m. on Faith Radio.
Funny past the hour, talking with Drew Trotter today. Drew has written on film and popular culture for a number of years, published in things like Books and Culture, Christianity Today, Critique Magazine. He's an author, a theologian, and he's also executive director of the Consortium of Christian Study Centers. He was a director and president of the Center for Christian Study in Charlottesville, Virginia, for 20-plus years, and has been our guest in the past. We talk what's going on in film and Hollywood. And Drew, just maybe by way of background, is it something that you, as a head of the study center, you realized that film was a great opportunity to maybe provide some pointers, as you say, some framework for spiritual discussions?
Yeah, that's a great question, Neil. I always loved film from the time I was a little kid, really. I went to movies and loved them and grew up in a Christian household that was open to the world and wanted to listen to it and hear it well and yet not necessarily abide by its values. So I feel like I was trained well to be able to go to movies and put them in their proper place. And so anyway, when I went back into university ministry some, golly, almost 30 years ago now, I looked around for influences on college students. And a lot of things leap out at one: music, television, and certainly movies. And movies were really big then, and they still are very large, very big, because of DVDs and because of things that we talked about earlier, streaming on Netflix and HBO and all of that. And so I started studying film very deeply, and I had studied it as an undergraduate, and I just renewed some of that academic material and began to lecture on film, and still believe that movies have a huge place in our society. We just haven't figured out quite yet, because of streaming, internet streaming, and computers and television, and being able to see movies on those media, what's going to happen with the theaters, because a whole lot of money has been invested in theaters. Fewer and fewer people are going to movies, even though they're paying more and more of a price. And so far, it seems to have settled out that parents are taking all their little kids to animated films, and a lot of people are going to big budget, kind of thin, thematically, action adventure movies.
Which is nice to see in the big screen, and especially if you've got one of the new theaters with the recliners and the whole bit.
Exactly. So, yeah. And the sound, the speakers are incredible nowadays. And, of course, you've got the advent of 3D, which seems that it's going to be here. And some movies are better in 3D. Gravity was much better in 3D than it was in 2D. While most movies, really, it doesn't make that much difference to me anyway. But I think there's still a real place for smaller films. We've mentioned one already, Philomena. There's another one nominated for an Academy Award, Nebraska, and several others that are, you know, not really making a whole lot of money that are nevertheless really high quality films that really have an influence in our culture through what some people call the gatekeepers, the people who are editors of newspapers or who are television news people or artists of various kinds who influence our culture in a lot of ways, they're still going to movies, and they're still watching those, and they are a major influence on what they then communicate to us, the more general populace. So I think just numbers at the box office are not the only measure for how significant films are.
You mentioned Nebraska. One of our callers wanted to know, ask you what you know about that, and was thinking, you know, Bruce Dern had been acting for a long time. I assume it still takes a good actor or actress and a decent script to really make a good movie, regardless of all the special effects.
Really does. There's no doubt about it. The director of Gravity, Alfonso Cuarón, said Gravity simply wouldn't have happened without Sandra Bullock. And I think he's got a point. She was perfectly cast for that role, and she did a magnificent job. Nebraska is a great example. Excellent acting. And a good movie, Neil, regularly has good actors and actresses from top to bottom. It's amazing what the supporting cast can do. The stars, yeah, they're going to do a good job, and they're going to work hard at it, and they got where they were because they were that good, even though they're kind of crazy outside of film sometimes. But, boy, it's the supporting actors that really make a movie, and I think that's true in Nebraska. Bruce Dern is amazing. I will not take away from him. But the guy who plays his son, Will Forte, and then his wife, June Squibb, is just they're both just superb in their roles, and they really fill out the story and make the whole story feel like it's really one that you can identify with. And it's a wonderful, beautiful movie with a great, has a lot of F-bombs in it, but it's got a great story at the end of how the son kind of does something very sweet and very moving for his father to kind of help him through this delusion that he has that he's won $1 million. And it's really, really a fun movie to see, and with a great message, I think, at the end.
You talk about you can identify with it. Is that really one of the keys? I mean, if we can't identify with it, then it's not going to resonate?
That's exactly right. You know, a movie maker can have his own agenda and have his own theme that he wants to foist upon us. But if he doesn't touch something in us to make us willing to embrace that theme or that idea, then he's lost the game completely. And that is what happens with really great films. They touch something in us that we know is right and true, and it really helps us to embrace the story of that movie.
Which I guess brings up, and we have time to maybe get started here, but we'll pick it up after the break as well. But in terms of maybe agenda movies, I wouldn't put, I guess, all Christian films in that category, but it does seem like there are some that are more overt than others. And do, maybe before we talk Christian films specifically, we only have a minute or so, do agenda films generally do well or not?
Well, it just depends. That's a great question, too. It just depends. There's one, what I would call an agenda film in the Academy Award nominees this year, called 12 Years a Slave, done by a black man who is an Englishman. It's interesting, got the name of Steve McQueen, but it's not the Steve McQueen that Americans know very well. But it's very much about slavery and the horrors of slavery, and it's very preachy. I thought it was too much so. I thought it was an excellent movie. There's no doubt about that. And it is one of the top contenders for the Best Picture Award. But it was very, very agenda-based. I mean, there's one shot where you see the face of a black man who has just been put into slavery completely unjustly. He was a free man who was kidnapped. And you see his face in this underground prison, and then the camera pans up slowly. It actually tilts slowly up until you see in the background that they're in Washington, D.C., and you see Congress in the background. Mm. And it's sort of like, this is America, you know, and we are the ones that institutionalized slavery, and we are guilty, et cetera, et cetera. And I just thought it was a little preachy, frankly.
We'll pick it up here on the other side, then just talk a little bit more about that and go on and talk about some of what's going on in Christian films and a few other items as well. You're always welcome to join the conversation at 877-93-FAITH. Talking with Drew Trotter today. Drew critiques film and popular culture. He's been doing it for many years as a writer and a theologian. Glad to have him with us today on Connecting Faith. You're listening to Connecting Faith, and we always enjoy opportunities to connect with Drew Trotter. Drew serves as Executive Director of the Consortium of Christian Study Centers. He led the Center for Christian Studies in the Charlottesville, Virginia University campus for a number of years, and has been writing on film and popular culture, and is also a theologian, does a seminar entitled Show and Tell, How to View a Movie Responsibly. We're just talking about one of his talks that he does around Oscar time, understanding about what the Oscars nominated films have to tell us about ourselves. We're talking about films and what's going on in Hollywood. We're touched a little bit on just the agenda film, sort of that at the edge of preachiness. And I wanted to, Drew, give you a chance to talk a little bit about what's going on in terms of Christian films, because do they come across as an agenda? Because we kind of do have an agenda, right?
Yeah, that's a very good point. I mean, in one sense, Neil, every movie has got an agenda. Every movie is trying to tell a story, and that story says something about the nature of reality. You can't get away from that, no matter what the film is. Animated, action, adventure, comedy, drama, war picture, whatever it is, there are values embedded in life, in stories. It's just simply reality. Then the question becomes, which values? And how do you present them? And there are totally non-Christian films that sometimes present very strong Christian values, sometimes even straightforwardly. I mean, the famous example from history is the 1980s film, Chariots of Fire, that won the Academy Award. There wasn't anybody who was particularly Christian associated with the whole movie. But you also have Christian movies nowadays as a whole other phenomenon, and you know the most famous group down in Georgia that have done a number of films, Facing the Giants and all the various films that they've done that were very explicitly Christian, and they get better and better, but they always have a narrative that has someone becoming a Christian or thinking about becoming a Christian. In other words, it is this directly religious theme that is being portrayed, and religion is a very active and strong part of the narrative. And for those in our culture who don't understand religion and don't care about it, don't ever think about anything spiritual or religious on Sundays or Saturdays, then they just don't understand that. They can't even relate to a movie like that. And so what Christian movie makers have tried to do is make that a smaller part of the theme as much as possible. There was a wonderful film called Grace Unplugged, not a great Academy Award type film, not a lot of money put into it. But nicely acted, nicely shot. It was not an embarrassment. But it was about a girl who wanted to go off and make her life in the music industry, and she happened to be the daughter of a music minister at a church. And of course, that's a very common narrative, actually, especially in African American communities. I mean, Usher Raymond was in the choir at his church as a kid before he became Usher. But this story is really a nice little story about the girl going off and being challenged and having to figure out what she really does believe. And that was nicely handled, and I think realistically handled. Then you've got the second kind, and those are the movies about biblical narratives. You've got a big budget, well-known movie coming out in just a few weeks on Noah and the flood, done by a secular Jew named Darryl Aronofsky, who is fascinated with the story, and there is a lot of buzz right now about whether he's going to be able to get Christians to go to the movie or not. Has he been consistent enough with what the biblical record tells us of Noah? And it's got Russell Crowe in it and a lot of different people, Jennifer Connelly, Academy Award winners, both of them. But will it succeed among Christians? Who knows?
Should we expect? The movie will have probably a, you know, it won't have necessarily a biblical soundness to it necessarily. So do we go and just say, well, we'll get something out of it if we can, or do we just not have any expectations for it?
Well, see, I look at movies, yes, for myself, but I really look at movies, Neil, regularly as something that I need to go to be able to understand my neighbor, and to be able to relate to my neighbor, and to be able to have conversations with my neighbor about spiritual things that aren't awkward. You know, it's awkward to go up to your neighbor and say, hey, George, you were drunk the other night at the party. Let's have a talk about that. I mean, maybe you do that, and that can happen, but it can be a very natural thing to take them to a movie and then go and discuss it, and especially one that has a biblical narrative at the center of it. I mean, you'd have an 8-minute short film if you filmed everything the Bible actually tells us about Noah and the flood in 2 chapters. You've got to fill all that in to make a 2-hour movie with all kinds of other stuff, and apparently Aronofsky does that. The question is, how legitimate is that other stuff? And I think it's something we should go to see just because our friends who are not Christians will want to talk about it and find out what we think about it. And we need to realize, we need to understand what we think about it and think in a sophisticated, responsible way about what that movie says.
Well, talking about, I guess there's one other one we should mention, of course, coming out here soon, The Son of God, which is, it's, you know, we talk about, well, coming up with values embedded in the story. But this one clearly is about, there's a clear agenda here. This is simply just using the film to tell the story of Jesus.
Yeah, that's right. And is it an agenda film? Is it trying to make us think something? Yeah, it's got, like I said, every movie has that. But it's simply trying to tell the story of Jesus from what I know. I saw and was a big fan of the television series on the History Channel that this movie has been made from. They've shot some new scenes. They've added to it because the series on the History Channel was about the entire Bible. But they took the segments about Jesus and they've expanded them and made them into a feature-length film called Son of God, and they did an absolutely incredible job, in my estimation, of casting the guy who is Jesus, because he has this winsomeness about him, but this mysteriousness about him at the same time that makes him able to show anger, show compassion, show a sort of quizzical, humorous curiousness, and all of them sort of, none of them seem to, in my estimation, go against the biblical picture of Jesus and who he was. So I recommend that highly. Doesn't mean it's perfect. It's not the Bible. It needs to be compared to the Bible to think well about the person of Christ and how much it shows us about him. But it's a very good job, I thought. I thought it was a really really interesting take, and much more full-orbed than The Passion of the Christ, which is mostly about the death of Christ and the bad things that happen near the end of Christ's life and all of that, or the bad things. I mean, it's the cross. We're glad it happened, but it was horrific. And the focus in that movie on violence and on the beatings that Christ undergoes and all that, they're only one segment of the life of Jesus. And this tries to do a lot more balanced picture of the whole of Jesus' ministry. And that makes it more fascinating to me.
Drew, you mentioned the word violence, and it reminded me, I guess, one of the questions I had. It does seem like we're Christians have at least been careful about limiting our exposure to sexual content in movies, but violence kind of gets a pass. I mean, I know there have been some reports and studies about that we have really become a violence-saturated society. Are you seeing that in the films a lot as well?
Couldn't agree more. I could not agree more that the all the explosions, and worse than that in many ways, all the blood and guts that is being spilled on screen, of course, none of it's real. But it doesn't change the fact that it fits into human beings who are real, who live in a world that's a violent world, and it makes them more used to that. And, of course, as we know, sometimes quite explicitly with kids or even, obviously, full-grown adults who have problems mentally, you can have terrible things that result from that. And the influence on the two kids out in Colorado years ago who shot up their school after having seen the movie Basketball Diaries, it's just documented. And I think it's a real problem. And I think you're right. Of the big three, which are sex, violence, and language, and you've got drugs as well, but drugs are not as displayed as often. But the drugs, violence, I mean, excuse me, the violence, sex, and language, we give language and violence much more of a pass than we should. We are careful about the sex. I think that's a wise thing to do. But the violent movies, I think, act on us, and I know the language does as well. And God cares about language. One of the Ten Commandments is about language and how we use words. So we really need to be thinking better about that and understand what our own spiritual flashpoints are when we are partaking in this kind of media.
You know, thinking about if Hollywood kind of polices itself in some of those areas, but it did remind me, we chatted just before the show a little bit about, you know, there are a couple of sort of controversies surrounding the Oscars, but just thinking about that, maybe we can talk about those, but is there a sense of sort of self-policing when it comes to boundaries in this kind of artistic medium?
Well, the Motion Picture Association of America, which sets up the ratings and which is really the larger organization than the Academy Award, you know, Academy, that organization is very, very serious about trying to police itself and trying to put ratings on films that are accurate and that are fair and really do a strong job of that. I don't know of a greater failure in that regard that I have seen personally than The Wolf of Wall Street. I was surprised at how explicit the sexuality was and the language that was used. And it got an R rating. Now, an R rating, if it were actually policed, would be one thing, but it's really not policed anything like as strongly as an NC-17 rating is. And I'm surprised that movie did not get an NC-17. It's going to be interesting to see what happens now in the future and whether NC-17 just goes the way of all flesh and doesn't, you know, just dies, if they're going to give R ratings to that movie.
You were talking a little bit about one of the award nominees that got pulled back from the song from the movie Never Alone. Of course, it sort of caught our attention because Johnny Tada was the singer on that. It sort of kind of snuck in the back door and kind of got booted out the front. Talk a little bit about that.
Very interesting story. There's this song that was in this small Christian film that had barely even met the requirements for being released in time, and nobody had seen it in the Academy, who votes on these things, but a former member of the Academy's board who knew all of the musical people in the Academy sent an email to them to say, please give your attention to song number 57 on your ballot. It's a great song, and left it at that. Now, there are thousands of things that are done. Full-page ads taken out in Hollywood trade papers, lavish parties, gifts that are sent to Academy members, all kinds of ways in which people break the rule of actually publicizing their own films and their own movies and their own actors, their own songs, et cetera, et cetera. And this guy sent out one email to 250 people. Well, the Academy said that because of his position, and this is an interesting, and this argument has more substance than people sometimes give it credit. Because of this man's position as a former Academy board member, that he was using his influence too strongly, because the movie song actually got a nomination. That means it was rated as one of the top five songs of all the movies last year. I like the song. I thought it was a pretty good song. It's not a strongly Christian song in the sense of come to Jesus and, you know, a Fanny Crosby hymn or something. It's a perfectly acceptable song that could have been sung at the Academy Awards and nobody would have known the difference. But that nomination meant a lot to this film and to that to those, you know, song makers, of course. Well, then the Academy, when it found out about the email, did something that it has almost never done. Not exactly, but it's never done it for this kind of thing. It took back the nomination. And so now there are actually only four nominees for Best Song in a Motion Picture. It said this was an abuse, and we're not going to let that song go forward as a nominee. And that was an odd thing for them to do, because the song never would have won. Nobody would have heard of it, and it's never going to win over the song in Frozen, for instance, which is probably going to win, or any of the other songs. So the Academy really should have just let it go and not created a controversy. Well, then, when it did take away that nomination, and there was no good real reason why them, rather than lots of other people who do all these other things, Christians began to say, wait a minute, is this religious persecution? I mean, are you taking this away because the song happens to be done by Christians and in a small little film, and because the guy who was on the board actually was a Christian and wanted to see the movie honored? And there were some pretty stinging rebukes of the Academy, both from Christians and non-Christians, for taking away this, for the Academy board of directors who took away this nomination. And the jury's still not out. I don't know that anybody's got tapes of their discussions or is going to get anybody to confess, yeah, we're all a bunch of non-Christians and we want to persecute Christians in this way. But it was an odd story and a strange thing that shows that being a Christian in Hollywood, at the very minimum, you could say, being a Christian in Hollywood is not going to win you any friends.
Always great discussion with Drew Trotter. Thought we'd maybe play a little bit of the song here. Johnny Todd is singing it from the movie Never Alone. And we'll take a short break and then come back, talk more with Drew in just a moment as we talk films and Academy Awards and all those things. You're listening to Connecting Faith.
When my steps are lost and desperate for a guide, I can feel His touch, a soothing presence by my side.
Are you struggling to keep up with your fitness plans for the new year? We want to help. Join us for Commit to Live Fit 40-Day Challenge as Susie Larson leads you down a 6-week journey of faith and fitness. During these next few weeks, we'll focus on physical and spiritual steps to a healthier life as you commit to live fit. Sign up for free at myfaithradio.com. We start March 3rd. It's not too late to sign up for Commit to Live Fit 40-Day Challenge.
Radio companionship that's good for the soul.
I'd probably say it was just the leading of the Holy Spirit that, all right, listen, if you're going to have the radio on, at least do something good for yourself. I'm sure we will be amazed when we get to heaven and we find out what an impact it has made on people, and we never really realized it. Faith Radio is going to give you the opportunity to continue on that walk.
Connecting faith to life every day. Thanks for listening to Faith Radio.
Got about 10 minutes or so left with Drew Trotter. Been kind enough to give us an hour to talk a little bit about film and Hollywood and the Oscars coming up here in a couple of weeks. Drew has spent a number of years writing and critiquing film and popular culture, written in Books and Culture, Christianity Today, Critique Magazine, also is a theologian, and he's president, executive director of the Consortium of Christian Studies Centers, and has a great ministry and work across university campuses around the country, and we're always glad to have the opportunity to talk with Drew. He does a regular seminar called Show and Tell, How to View a Movie Responsibly, and as we've been talking about, you know, we want to be able to relate to the world around us, and they use opportunities to have spiritual discussions, and the movies are certainly a good way to do that. I do want to talk, Drew, a little bit about, you mentioned, you know, the animated films, how significant they are, and of course, pretty good crowd, a crop of animated films up for nomination, but I think probably Frozen is what the big one that everybody's sort of that's caught everybody's attention, hasn't it?
Yeah, it is. Interesting, interesting film with a lot of varying opinions on how Christian or non-Christian it is. The story really revolves around someone giving their life to save somebody else's life. That's a very Christian theme, to put it mildly, and a lot of love, but it really does play with the ideas of some of the famous old fairy tales that that it's actually built on, in which a man gives his life for a woman, and in this one, a sister gives her life for another sister, and there's sort of a, you know, feminine theme running through it that I thought was fine, and that's perfectly acceptable. It's just not what the story was, and the alteration of it makes sense within contemporary culture, certainly.
Animated films do seem to be, I guess, as we said right along, in terms of box office draws, they're getting bigger and bigger, I think, aren't they?
Oh, that's right. Despicable Me 2, Frozen, Monsters University, all of those were in the top 10 last year. And Frozen was just released at the end of the year, so it's still going strong, still selling lots of tickets. It's a big, big thing. Pixar, of course, is the king, although in recent years, other studios have caught up. Warner Brothers just released a movie called The Lego Movie that's animated, obviously, and is a wonderful little film. It's really fun and a lot of interesting things in it that is doing great box office. In fact, it had the biggest February in the history of film with the exception of The Passion of the Christ. And so animated is big nowadays.
Well, part of that is because, you know, in the entire northern half of the country, no one can go to school because of all the snow, so we're all just going to the movies. That may be. I'm not sure if that's actually true.
Hey, even as far down as Virginia, we were snowed in this past couple of weeks, too.
Yeah. Well, I'd like to say I'm sorry for you, but I just, you know, we don't have enough compassion to go around on that one, I guess. But
hey,
Drew, we got a few minutes left. I'm always interested in, you know, if you were, once in a while, like, you know, look on the library shelves, the DVDs or some movies there. Is there something that, you know, if you were looking through your Netflix and say, here's one that's worth seeing that's been out for a while and maybe it's been years ago, or are there a couple that you'd say, you know, this is just worth reviewing and here's why?
Well, that's an interesting question. I'd love to have time to think about it again, but there are a couple that come to mind. I loved a movie several years back with Ryan Gosling in it called Lars and the Real Girl.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very strange film, and you're gonna pick up the jacket at the video store and say, good grief, this Christian guy is recommending this. It's about a slightly retarded man who hears about life-size sex dolls, orders one, and falls in love with her and treats her the way that a good husband should treat a wife or a good man should treat a woman. And the way in which the community gets around him and supports him and helps him try to distinguish between reality and fantasy, and there's not a sexy thing about the movie. I mean, there's no... it's just kind of a comic approach because of that. But it's a lovely, lovely film with lots of great lines and a great performance and really really worth seeing.
Go ahead.
No, it's just a great movie.
Yeah. Actually,
we mentioned this year, very current, Philomena is a movie that people really should see and that I think has a lot of benefit to it from a Christian perspective. While the view of the church as symbolized by the nuns in Philomena is not strong. Nebraska, I loved Nebraska, even though it doesn't have a religious word in the whole thing, unless it's a swear word, and I don't even remember that very often. But it's a strong family value kind of movie that is really worth seeing, and with great performances, and a lovely way to think about a grown son and his aging father and how he treats him and how he helps him. It's a beautiful, beautiful movie.
It does seem that a number of them, you know, that are up for nomination at least, aren't. It's not about the sort of the blockbuster, all the high tech stuff. It's more about just here's a good story.
Well, that's often true. Gravity, of course, has got the highest high tech of all. But you're right; they're all captivated by their stories. One very interesting story that we haven't mentioned that, again, has Christian elements in it, certainly huge Christian questions, is the movie Her by Spike Jonze, which is about a guy in the near future who downloads a new operating system to his smartphone that actually has solved the problems of artificial intelligence, and he falls in love with this female voice in his smartphone. And it sounds absolutely bizarre, and it is very creepy. It's a strange movie. But it really does ask a lot of questions about what a human being actually is. And Scarlett Johansson, who plays the voice in that movie, is amazing. She just does a magnificent job, as does Joaquin Phoenix, who is the star of the film, and Amy Adams, who seems to be everywhere now, who's the supporting actress.
Our time is gone. It's always a quick hour, and talk about raising some of the big questions and finding ways to talk about faith in modern culture and using film. Drew Trotter, Executive Director of the Consortium of Christian Studies Centers, has been kind enough to join us again today. We always appreciate the opportunity. And by the way, if you missed part of today's conversation, you can always check out the podcast online.